Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
Brand new book out by Erica Commissar has an interesting premise. Well, I mean, maybe it doesn't sound that interesting now or that controversial, but apparently it is, Timory. And here is the premise of the book. Children need mothers. In order to exist and flourish in life, babies need a mother. And here is what made the book so controversial. And this is coming from a woman who describes herself as a political liberal. Here's what the book is called, and this is what has people all a-twitter on Twitter. Being There, Why Prioritizing Motherhood in the First 3 Years Matters. Now, what would be so upsetting by saying that a baby needs to have time with its mother, do you suppose?
Here's the big deal. She's not even saying the first 15 years, she's saying the first 3 years, and that's what she's narrowed in on. And while research shows much more than that, right? Those first years she's saying are important. We're talking about not leaving babies. A lot of babies anymore are being left in daycare. And I don't mean to sound harsh, but I know that that's what's happening because I hear from a lot of moms who are struggling because they go, I feel bad leaving my child here because, you know, maybe I've bought that more expensive house and I'm living in a lifestyle that I'm stuck in. And I had to leave right after that 6 months of maternity leave were up.
Yeah, if you get 6 months, that's on the high end sometimes.
6 months, 6 weeks, 3 months.
Yeah. The argument is, from Ms. Commissar, is that the mother should be there for the baby for the first 3 years of life, that you should not put your child in daycare for the first 3 years of life. And here's how she came to this conclusion. She spent 3 decades, that is 30 years, working directly with children and parents in New York City. As she did that, she noticed a disturbing uptick in ADHD among boys and depression among girls.
And we're not just talking about anyone. We're talking about a practicing psychologist who works regularly with families with all kinds of depression, anxiety, sexual abuse, divorced and broken homes. And what is she saying? That the mom's presence matters. And, you know, this ADHD and depression issue that has truly skyrocketed over the years.
And this is not just, like you said, not just psychologists even, but neuroscientists and even the area of epigenetics confirms this, that the increase in depression among kids and the diagnosis of ADHD in the last 3 decades has skyrocketed. And she says, well, we can look to things like the phone and all of that, and I think that plays some part. But there is no doubt that it is directly correlated with whether or not the mother was there for those first 3 years, or whether that kid stayed right in daycare.
Well, here are two more statistics. We've seen a fifth of all children, we're talking 19% here, a 1 year difference between the year of 2011 and 2012. They saw a 20% almost increase in children being diagnosed with different types of psychiatric disorders. But here's what's even more staggering. In a period of 1 year difference over the last decade, they essentially saw 119% increase in individuals being hospitalized for eating disorders.
119%.
What are we seeing here? That people are struggling psychologically, that they're struggling with their self-worth. We're seeing that young people are not being taught maybe what they should learn at an early age, like empathy, unconditional love. Because when you don't have close physical contact, this poses a lot of challenges. You know, I'll never forget Dr. Jennifer Robax Morris, you know, Love and Economics. And she talks about having adopted a child from Romania and how the child for a period of, those most fundamental early year, the child had no physical contact and had a baby bottle strapped to the side of its crib. The child then had severe developmental delays, and how she, as a feminist herself, someone who had been in the movement, has a PhD, she saw actually where I need to be is with my child at home.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly. That's what turned her to becoming a person working on behalf of the victims of the sexual revolution.
Absolutely.
And the children are those victims. It's a very similar, it seems to me, very similar stats between children who don't have their mom at home and those who have had a divorce when they are young, in that your identity as someone who is loved gets formed in those early years. And either you are someone who is loved or you're not. And if you think of yourself as someone who is not loved, that's devastating. Like, your whole foundation of your life is just crumbled. You've got nothing to build on. And since we're made for love, I mean, just to get theological here, like, you're basically undercutting the whole meaning of their existence.
Right.
By not, and I get, and we should probably clarify our terms here, because there may be some moms out there who are already a little bit like, come on, you guys. Like you said, Timory, we've got to pay the bills. I'm doing what I can, but the kids, we get that. It's not that you don't love the kid and you're doing your best. We get that. So we want to be careful here.
Yeah.
It's the identity that the kid gets from, for example, being in with a bunch of other kids in a daycare setting. And I know it's such a touchy subject, yet
it
I feel like it, we do.
Subject.
It's like every other subject we talk about.
But here's
about
the deal.
You gotta be aware of what's actually happening.
We're not just saying, hey, we're not up here just saying, hey, we're advocating for moms being home and that's it. What we're saying is science, neuroscience, psychologists, all of these different branches of research, all of these different statistics about children who are struggling, they are being linked very clearly, and I want to say distinctly, with the mother not being as present. And yes, that's often due because she's being pulled outside of the home. But we're just sharing information that is posing a challenge to children. And we're talking about children. We're not talking about you and how you're able to make it work at home. We're talking about children right now.
Well, that's an important distinction, because often these subjects, whether you're talking about abortion or divorce or kids in daycare, often the first response is, yeah, but what about this particular adult, right? The conversation
right.
always goes directly to the adult. Well, you don't know my situation with the divorce, or you don't know what a jerk that other person was, or, well, I was forced to. And okay, yes, okay, yep, we get that. What we're talking about here right now, though, is the kid. And the kid, very often, as with everything else in the sexual revolution, whether it's abortion or divorce or this, I think the kid's perspective is often drowned within all of that adult talk. Like, well, what about me? I gotta do this. I gotta do
right.
that. I gotta do this. Okay, yeah. But we've got to somehow change the framework
right.
to take the kid into account, because the kid is facing a very unjust situation.
And that's what we're talking about here. So I hope anyone who's listening understands where we're coming from and truly listens with an open mind, just like any of these topics. You guys, we're talking about, if you feel guilty, if you feel challenged, again, it's an opportunity to face the challenge and say, what can I do? What can I do? Within reason, but also sometimes what can I do that might be uncomfortable as well? You know, look at how can we start with making and implementing little changes? Because, you know, I know that in general, this is a topic that women are concerned about, that you guys are thinking about, talking about often. So use this as an open-minded conversation.
Yeah, and I like the term uncomfortable. I mean, I don't like it, but it's true that some of the decisions we have to make in our cultural setup, if we want to be faithful to our kids, faithful to God even, like just our own spiritual lives, you're going to have to buck the culture at many, many places, right? You're going to have to say, no, you know, here I live in Orange County and is surrounded by a bunch of people who make a lot of money, you know, and have certain lifestyles that are very fast paced. And in many ways, and I'm not saying every other place doesn't have its own challenges, but there's a lot of challenges to living there, because the pressure is, well, you've got to have your kids doing this and this and this. And
right.
You've talked about this, Timory, like your choice to do the kind of work we're doing here on the radio causes a lot of issues, in the sense that you could actually be out making some money somewhere.
We've had great offers, but the reality is that we're sacrificing one thing for another. And right now, I'm single. I can make the sacrifices to work later and work much longer days than I would like for an apostolate, for a mission right now. You know, I am a missionary in what I'm doing, essentially. And you in your home, you are a missionary. And that's why even, you know, Erica Komisar also talks about moms who are already home with their children, how actually moms who are home with their children don't kind of get off here. They too can struggle by maybe being on their phones too much, social media, emails, text messaging, you know, maybe kind of just taking off all the time and not really being there as consistently as they need to be. There's a reason, you know, and again, this gets into a touchy subject, but there's a reason that the mother has the ability to literally feed her child for the first year or so after the baby's born. It's meant to help bring mother and child there for the development of the child. I am not talking about you moms. Yes, you moms, it's good for you to be there for your kid, for you personally, right. But it's both. And when you have another individual before you, that person comes first.
Yeah, you start with, and this is something that Dr. Morris always says, if you start with the question, what is most just for the child, right? If I look at the baby and just say, well, what duty do I have to the child to right. make him or her not face an injustice? What decisions do I need to make? And I think it will require sacrifice to put, even putting down the phone is a big one. I notice that a lot. And you know what? Kids notice that.
They do.
My kids notice that. Yeah. They're like, Dad, Mom, it's time to put down that phone right now. Like, or, you know, get out of your office for a minute. And right. Yep, you're right. You're right. You know, like, you are my priority, or you need to be right now.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Don Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So one of the things that I love as we're talking about Erica Komisar's book, and she talks about how, you know, maybe some women aren't able to make a change. Maybe they're not able to be there for whatever reason. You know, she recognizes, I get it, you know, so socioeconomic, there are a lot of things coming their way. But she actually, in her book, talks about different ways you can make a difference. And being time, you know, and not making sure that it's not just the end of the day, you know, you're exhausted, you, even though that's quality time and it's one-on-one, 1 hour, she kind of recognizes that's not enough. And so she tries to give tips of, well, here are things that you can do that can help. But she still comes to the conclusion that the ideal is babies need their mom's home.
Yeah, the quality time thing is important. Let's just, before you give us some tips there, the cultural idea is, well, if I go and I just focus on my kid for 30 minutes or whatever, an hour before they go to bed, that will make up for all of the time that I wasn't there. As a psychologist, he's saying, no.
It's not working.
The quantity of it, knowing the kid, even knowing, I mean, I don't know. Kids just want their parents present. Like, even seems like almost all of my kids, I remember doing this as a kid myself. I had a bedroom that was upstairs. All my kids' bedrooms are upstairs. I don't even want to go upstairs when I was a kid without my parents. Like, come on, you can come up there with me, right? But there's that somebody present all the time that is watching out for you, that cares about you, that is going to keep you safe, you know, that it's going to be okay because mommy or daddy is there. I don't know. I don't think we can underestimate that, right? Like, that's an important deal. They know that you, being their biological parent, you've got that extra little extra something that the daycare worker, as much fun as they might be and as much as they might actually care for the kid, or not, nothing against daycare workers.
Right. Or if you're also, you know, we don't want to just talk to biological parents, but also if you're an adoptive parent, you know,
absolutely.
You're filling that role for the biological parent that couldn't be there. And that is so important in your love and care for that child. But Don, I love the story that you gave the example of being a little kid and not wanting to go upstairs alone. You know, I too had this. In our first home when I was much younger, it was downstairs where the bedrooms were. And I mean, to me, that was creepy. I mean, I was a scaredy cat when I was a kid. I didn't like sleeping in my own bed a lot of the time. You know, the vacuum with, you know, a shirt hanging over it. It looked like a witch. I was scared. I couldn't sleep. You know, I talk about this, and as I'm hearing you, we learn safety. And what safety means by being close in proximity to our parents. We learn the boundaries that they have and the way they care for us helps us to teach ourselves, right, to care for ourselves, to have boundaries, to recognize there's a yes and no to certain things. You know, we learn, and I think that this is a big one, from our parents, we learn about God. We learn about God in his fatherhood. We learn about the sacrificial love that our parents show. We learn that unconditional love from the parents. You know, that I can do anything wrong, and yes, there may be consequences, but I am still loved.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of kids, because they don't have the parents present, you know, they can get away with doing a lot of not so great things, and the parents never know.
I would even add the word security to that. You talked about the presence being a sort of a moral shaper. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly it is. But just the security aspect of it, knowing that no matter what happens, there's somebody bigger and stronger there right beside me to make sure that everything's going to be okay. And that absolutely relates to God. It also absolutely relates to just psychological well-being, right? Like if you're out there alone, the stress, you know, I'm working on this documentary, and at the moment, the current cut that I have opens up with all of these news clips talking about the problems faced by women in our culture. And there's this one study that says middle-aged women, their biggest problem is that they're the most stressed. Middle-aged women. And then the next study actually was millennial women are the most stressed. And then you've got teenage, and they all kind of say, like, whatever age group we look at, their major issue is stress. And you think, well, why are we stressed? Because we think there's this danger lurking that I can't handle. I can't do all of this. I don't have that security. Because, I mean, what's the alternative to being stressed? I think it's just trust. It's safety, right? And I get there's a stress that comes from I've got a lot of stuff to do and I'm not sure I can do it. There's that, but there's also a stress that is I'm just not sure I'm safe right here. Like I'm not sure that this is a place where I'm not in danger.
But I also think it's a moment where I'm not sure if I'm okay in doing what I'm doing. Like if I'm doing what I should be doing. And what we learn as little children and even as we grow older by having our parents present and involved is we are affirmed in who we are. But you have a lot of people who did not receive that parental affirmation that now are trying to work and they're doing incredible things. Like I look at the things millennials are doing. I think that they get a bad rap a lot of the time, but they're often very generous. It's just that they've lived in a culture that has taught them that, you know, their self-worth is identified in other areas. But they're looking for ways to give of themselves. They're looking for these things, and they're doing a lot in their professions and their volunteer time at times. You know, maybe they're not volunteering for the things that we would consider the most ideal, but they still feel like they have no self-worth. And I think this comes back in a lot of ways, too. They were not affirmed. They do not know that they are enough. You know, the Father Josh Waltz was my fellow keynote speaker at this conference this last weekend. And he talked at one point about how we're no longer human beings. We're human doings. And we need to get back to the being part, the simplicity, pulling back. It's funny because the next part I said, it's about who we are, not what we are. Anyone can do what you do. No one can be who you are. And the comfort in knowing that and recognizing who I am is enough before our Lord. And whether you're disappointing a friend, a family member, parents, a spouse, you know, hopefully you're not disappointing them for the wrong reasons, you know, but that if you disappoint them, you are still enough and that you can come and be better by the person you are, not what you do.
Right. Well, a lot of teenagers especially, but I assume even adults, they are under pressure to perform for their parents, right? We talked about sports on the last show, but a lot of times it's academics or whatever. They see their self-worth on their, you know, getting that A on that quiz or getting into that right school, or you're right, it's what they do, not necessarily that I'm going to be affirmed just based on being the son or the daughter of those parents. That's all I need, and ultimately that's good enough. Now, just to get back quickly though, Timory, I sort of sloughed over the morality aspect of that parent being there. And I don't want to do that because the morality thing, like you said, is very important. And I think a lot of times as parents, we are told that, you know what, you got to let your kids sort of do a bunch of stuff so that they won't be alienated from you. Like, be a little bit more permissive in what you do, and then you can, they'll be a little bit more friendly towards you, and you can keep those lines of communication open. Now, I have a theory on this, and this is one that I practice, and I know not everybody agrees with this, but let me just, my parenting theory on this, that actually kids do not feel comfort from having a life that they can do whatever they want. Like, right. That's actually not comforting to them. And when you come in and say, no, child, you will not do that, even though they maybe throw a fit, maybe they scream and tell you how much you are Satan or whatever it is, right? Even in the midst of all that, and even if they don't know it right now, eventually they will understand, and maybe even if they don't. But what you are saying to them is, I care enough about you that I'm willing to take all of this flack from you to keep you from what I think is a dangerous situation, or to keep you from going down that path that's not going to be good for you. I'm doing this because I care about you. That's why I'm going to stop you. The kids who are out there just with a free-for-all saying, oh, I can do whatever I want. I mean, my parents, what do they usually say? My parents don't care.
Right.
Exactly. Right? Oh, I don't have a curfew. You know, my parents don't care when I get home.
Those are the kids where you're, oh, I'm so happy you're in my house right
well,
now.
You're like, is that really, as a parent, do you want to hear that? Like, my parents, I think that's a good term. Like, my parents don't care when I get home.
What they're
really?
Saying in some ways is, my parents don't care totally what happens to me.
Do you want the term don't care in that sentence about you as a parent?
Right. And I remember growing up when I had friends who would say, my parents don't care what happens to me. I can do it. Like, they got that their parents legitimately did not care. And that's what they're saying often when they say that. Like, sometimes they think, oh, my parents don't care what time I get home. But often they'll go, my parents didn't care what happened to me. They didn't know what was happening.
And you
got to
be careful that those two things aren't, right? Like, I get when your kid, you know, you feel like they're mature enough that you let out the leash a little bit and you're going to say, okay, you know, within these parameters, you know, sort of do what you want. I get that. I mean, that's what we try to do as parents. But yeah, I think there's a fine line there between saying to the kid, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not going to monitor your internet usage. I'm not going to do all that. I mean, how much are you actually saying to the kid, I don't care? And even if you're not saying that, how much of is the kid feeling that, right? I mean, I'd prefer to have the kid be a little bit more like, all right, when are you going to give me a little freedom because you care too much? Not to be like overly crazy about it, but.
And it comes a point where you form them where the freedom comes more and more later on.
Yeah.
Or in certain situations, you test to see how the freedom will work out,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's Timmerie. And at Don Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timmery on Relevant Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
So we call the show Trending because we try to comment on the trends in the culture, obviously. Now, if you've listened to the show for a while, you may be thinking, man, Don and Timmery spent a lot of time talking about stuff that you're not sure is okay for radio, right? Like, it's not like, is this safe for work even? Do I have to turn it down? Can I listen to it at work? And listen, it's not like we go out and try to find stuff that's not safe for work. It just feels like the trends in the culture go that way, and we want to make sure that we address them because, if nothing else, this is what your kids are interacting with. And so a new Showtime series that I have not seen, saw the trailer, and someone else has watched it for us, thankfully, so that we don't have to, that I want to just make you aware of. It's called SMILF. And if you're not familiar with the term MILF, good. You shouldn't be familiar with it, but it has to do with mothers that other people would like to, shall we say, go to bed with. And this one just adds the term single to the front of it. Okay, so we're talking about single mothers who are sexually attractive to men. Is that fair, Timmery? It's a struggle
good
for
enough,
me. Anyway,
good
so,
enough.
That, so that's the title, Smilf is the title of this Showtime film. On one hand, it's as bad as you might expect, but on the other hand, the reason I wanted to bring it up today is that it's just so sad, and it's such a picture of where too many women are, unfortunately. So it is about this single mother who is depressed and full of anxiety and out there trying to get someone to go to bed with her. But the biggest obstacle to all of that, the biggest obstacle to success in her life, it seems, is her kid. That's basically how, and in the midst of it, what you see is all of the moral degeneracy that has come from the sexual revolution. You see it in the first 30 minutes of this I guess you'd call it a sitcom.
We don't even have to go that deeply in the show, because I think in general I see a lot, not even just single moms, but moms who can struggle with this, where I've been on the receiving end where I'm like, hey, can you take this or do this? And I've literally read, and I read this recently in a text, F my kids, I can't. Like, really? And she wasn't saying F my kids, but like, F, I'm not able to because of my kids.
Yeah.
Like, they were the roadblock there preventing her from doing something. And I'm like thinking, man, this isn't even that big of a deal. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It broke my heart that that would even, the effort would even be put in there. And I think that, you know, single moms, or just a lot of moms in general, think that, well, I can't do things because my kids are weighing me down.
Well, and it is particularly sad, I think, when the thing that you're not able to do is go have promiscuous sex with guys, which is what the woman in this series is all about. Like, this is the problem. She's very concerned about what parts of her body look like. She's very she goes and literally invites someone she does not know, met minutes before, home with her to have sex, and then he gets freaked out because her kid is in the same room under. I mean, it's all very weird and disgusting, frankly. But here's the message, and I just want to point that out. The message is that in order for a woman to be a success, she must have a lot of promiscuous sex and have a career, and the obstacle to that is children. That has been the message for 50 years, and this is what we get. A bunch of sad, doped up women who are out there trying to get men to come to their house that they don't know. I mean, it's just so, I mean, it's propaganda. I get that. It's propaganda, but you're just like, really? Is this what we're presenting now?
We don't want to have any type of responsibility. Because some people are looking at their husbands this way as well, to be quite frank. You know, there are things that are getting in the way of me enjoying my time at the moment. You know, my child or whatever it is. And we have to come back to this reality that people matter. And I know this sounds maybe sometimes too simplistic, but people are putting more effort into being more excited and glad to be forced home because their dog's home and they need to walk it. Than having a child. And I'm not kidding. I know so many people, oh, I can't, man, my dog's at home. They don't say like, oh, bummer, but my dog's at home. You know, they care about the responsibility of the dog, but usually not cats, but usually they, luckily usually I've not heard cats. That one. Luckily it's just the dog, because I'm not a fan of cats. They're evil.
Quick story. So just within the last few hours, before I got here, a friend of mine showed me a video that her nephew had produced, like this little story he had written. And it's this cute little story about a dog who got adopted by this person. They made a nice little short film out of it. Really nice. And she was proud because her nephew had done this. It's a well-produced thing. And I'm like, that's great. Yeah, the only difference was when he gave it to the production company, this little short story, he won a contest or something. The only difference was when he wrote it, it was about a cat. And they... And I'm like, well, that makes sense. I mean, nobody's going to believe that you adopted that cat and loved it. So they made it about a dog. And also, I'm like, well, yeah, you wouldn't want a cat to be on film either. Because what are you? You're not going to make the cat. Anyway, just that literally great. Happened within the last couple of hours. So,
gosh.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, cats, no. Dogs, yes, of course. I totally derailed your thought there.
But no, it's great. But the idea is that this responsibility, we're willing to have responsibilities for certain things we want to have responsibility for, but we're cutting ourselves off from things that we don't want to have responsibility for. And that being, we're cutting people out of our lives, essentially.
Yeah, and unfortunately, people are the means to our happiness, right? Like, if you actually, if this woman, and again, I get it, it's propaganda, it's script writing, but there is an element of truth there, that there's a lot of women out there who are depressed, who are sad, who are mad at their kids for not letting them have the sex life that they think. When they, if they actually examined it a little bit, true happiness is found in giving yourself to another person.
Right.
And it starts with that kid, right? Like, that's right. That's actually where women are. Well, it's their genius, as John Paul II would call it. Like, that you have that special something as women that I don't have as a man.
Women connect in a special way to other people.
Yeah.
We see the other person a little differently than, not that men don't see other people, but women see other people. You know, it's so interesting because I'll have these interactions and, you know, I'll be talking to someone and you'll be at the grocery store even, and you'll see, oh man, this checker kind of looks like they're having a bad day. And I remember being with some of my friends, and they're all guys, and they're going, really? Like, I didn't even notice. She really was having a bad day. And I give that as an example where we see things differently. Not to put down men, this isn't about it in the moment, but it's that women have this special connection to other people. And this is what, in many ways, a lot of men talk about, as it's part of what helps to humanize me. How John Paul II would talk about how often for women, looking at, you know, the psychology and the philosophy of it, women often even desire more so to have a child, more so than they do to have a spouse at times. They desire to have a child. And how for a man, it's good to have the woman's care and focus for the child, because it helps the man to care and focus on people more. And as part of the complementarity of men and women, that is such a gift.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, you have that special nurturing, life-giving quality inherent in you that we desperately need as men. Like, we, you know, I just feel like we could spend days and weeks together as men and not learn anything really about each other than, you know, what you did at work or whatever, right? Like, we don't make that connection. We're not nurturers, in the sense that people are not likely to come away from an interaction with me saying, oh, you know, I really feel refreshed and you really understood. You know, as much as I would like that to be the case, I understand that I'm just not that good at it. Whereas you, Timory, can spend all that time all weekend interacting with people, giving of yourself. Whereas I come away from that, yeah, I would be spent, but it's because not that I was giving all the time, I don't think, right? It would just be like, I would feel like they're sucking the life out of me rather than they're giving. So it is, yeah, I mean, motherhood is a very unique and special thing. And by making children the enemy of femininity, the second wave feminists and those that have come since have really, that was a fundamental error in that whole thing. Like, you made children the obstacle to what you considered happiness. And I think many, sometimes inadvertently, sometimes explicitly, saying, all right, you know, the reason we need things like contraception and abortion is because kids get in the way of the sex and the money and the power that I'm going to get, it's going to make me happy. No, that's not correct.
Well, you know what's funny is it kind of makes me think about the workplace and how, you know, they've done a lot of studies. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, the study came out about women in the workforce and how men would be frustrated sometimes by the female bosses, in the sense that, you know, if a man got up there leading a project management team, he'd come up and be like, okay, guys, you do this, you do this, you do this. Okay, go. And they were talking about the change and how they're seeing more women in some of these different industries that were maybe a little more male dominant before, and how the woman project manager comes up, okay, I'm going to have you do this, I'm going to have you do this, and you do this. How are we going to do this? How are you going to do this? The woman kind of starts to invest in that person, trying to, not that she's babying the individual, trying to walk them through the steps, because she's kind of trying to build up and interact and collaborate, versus the man's like, here's a process, you do it and you go. And how a bunch of the men in this team were getting frustrated, but how they had to come to understand, she's actually trying to interact with me on a personal level in this moment and collaborate more. It's not that I'm incompetent, it's that she wants to work with me
together. Whereas a man would see success, as long as I can see the finished product, we're good. I don't care what you did to make that happen. I don't care how you felt in making that happen. Just make it happen. Whereas the woman's much more concerned. Yeah, right. About how, you know, how you did it. How you felt doing it. Yeah, it's a good distinction.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So Don and I were talking about, if you weren't with us just before the break, you know, being in the workforce and how there's been this huge change for a lot of men in particular having to adjust to in the workforce as, you know, women are more and more involved in industries that didn't have women as involved, and how women like to collaborate more and interact more in the project versus men sometimes would be like, you do this, and you send them on their way. And how a lot of men have been talking about how they feel incompetent at times because the woman's trying to collaborate. And you mentioned before the break, and I said this off air, Facebook Live got it. Yeah, you know, they ask how you feel when you're doing this and how did it go. I would never ask someone, Don. I'm offended. I would never ask someone how they felt.
Would you be concerned about how they're feeling doing it, though?
Not that much.
So what would be your concern then, other than getting the project done?
It's important that they got it. I guess maybe I would have used different words, like, how do you think it went? Did it run smoothly? Was everyone involved?
And what would be your concern in asking that?
Well, give an example. You've been asked how you felt?
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, would the relationships among the group that got it done be of more concern to you than me, right? So, you know, you and your coworker had a spat. As long as that rocket gets to the moon, I don't care. Okay. Like, that's sort of the male, and especially me being a very task oriented personality, right? Like, right. When I see a task, I want it done. I'm not going to delve too much into, you know, how or why or what your interactions were, all the relationship stuff that's going on, you know, all of that, the caring stuff, the nurturing stuff. I'm just probably not. That's why I'm, you know, not a particularly good coach, for example, right? Like, as a coach, you know, I have coached in the past. I don't want to downplay that and pouring yourself into the lives of others and that sort of thing. But as a project manager, I don't know. I wouldn't be that concerned with all of the personal stuff. I suspect a woman would be more so. I'm
so
just
essentially
saying.
What you're saying is, if you give someone a task, just get it done and leave me alone. I don't care what happens, just get it done. And I am, maybe because I'm like really hard on myself and I'm really hard on those around me. In my mind, I'm like, just leave me alone. Finish it. You know, why can't you guys get over your arguing or whatever? But I do care.
Right.
I do care that they are happy, not necessarily that they're happy, but that they're getting it done well, you know, rather than like just suffering the whole time. Like, man, and I think from my perspective, you know, our work dignifies us. And it's not just a matter of going through the motion of doing it, but there's a person there.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? Like, you actually have to see people, and that's the feminine genius, as we've been calling it, that John Paul II called, the nurturing, the ability to bring life out of others. It's not just biological motherhood. It's the idea that I can help you become better, like more of who you were meant to be with what I provide as a woman. And that's not, it's not like a dichotomy between like all men don't have this, all women have it to the same degree. No, that's not what we're saying at all. We're just saying that the nurturing aspect of a woman.
Right.
Yeah, that's not just a stereotype. I mean, I think that's a fact.
Well, and it's something that is drawing all of us as men and women ultimately to that personalistic norm that John Paul II talked about, how the person is always an end in and of themselves, that a person is never a means to your pleasure, to your happiness, to your fulfillment. A person is an end. There's a goodness, a greatness, a worth to them. And that's why the only, he says, adequate attitude we can have to another individual is to love that person. And I think that's why I love some of the church's teaching on the dignity of the worker, because it focuses on this. You know, I think about Rerum Novarum and all these different documents, the dignity of the worker, that yes, you know, the process and what happens in the work is great. But, and this is something I loved going to a Catholic university, and I loved it because before I ended up changing kind of my focus, I was an entrepreneurial business student. And what they instilled in us, that your greatest asset as a business owner, as a company, are the people you have, your employees. They are your greatest access. If they are well cared for, if they are working well, if they are good individuals, the product that they will produce will be good. But if they're not good, disciplined, loving individuals, what they produce ultimately may not be as good as it should have been.
Yeah, fair enough. Before we move to our last story, let me put in a quick plug for year-end tax donations. You might think, well, it's only November, but the year is going to be over before we know it. And I know that as we enter the holiday season, many of you are looking for where you're going to make those tax-deductible donations at the end of the year. And may we encourage you to check out Don Johnson Evangelistic Ministries. That's the 501c3 that produces this program that you are listening to. And we do a lot of other stuff. We speak and we make movies like the current documentary that I am producing. It's called Unprotected. It's about the sexual revolution. We need funds for all of that stuff. And so we rely on people like you, and we would be very grateful and very blessed if you would consider us with your tax-deductible donations at the end of the year. There's a very easy donate button at donjohnsonministries.org, or you can go to trendingdt to get the show page, and you can find donjohnsonministries.org there as well. And don't forget to check out Timmerie's speaking schedule and all the stuff that she does at timmerie.com.
Absolutely. And the support for the show makes a difference, you guys. The more you support the show, the more we can help bring it and access to other people. And, you know, we have an opportunity to evangelize in the area of our sexuality, in the area of atheism, the struggle with faith. And, you know, I can't tell you how often I've actually heard priests who say, I actually give your radio show as penance for some people who are really struggling with different sexuality, because you guys
not
talk,
as a punishment, but as an idea. Yeah.
But because you talk so bluntly, and it's something that they're already thinking about. So here's an opportunity for them to think about it and be challenged in a more purified way.
Nice.
Speaking of purity, as we're facing a culture that is so challenging, one of the things that I think sets us apart at times, and I'll never forget when I was younger, my mom, when I was going through a really difficult time with friendships, I think I was in middle school, she said, you know, you're called to be holy, and holy means to be set apart. And right now, I look at a lot of the clothing that some people are wearing, the interactions they're having, and I don't know that we're necessarily, there's something about us and the way we carry ourselves that always expresses this. And there was a recent piece on Verily magazine that was just excellent, and it talks about how these BBC and PBS starlets all have this one thing in common, and it's not that they're British. It's essentially that how they dress so eloquently on the BBC sets and the movies and the shows that they're in actually matches how they dress in real life. For example, Mary from Downton Abbey, Michelle Dockery, and just the beautiful outfits that she's wearing. I'll be sure to tweet this article out. But you see people like the star of The Queen on Netflix, or the star of Victoria, or Lily James, also from Downton Abbey. And you see all of these actors and actresses, but especially the actresses, they have class. And I don't know anything about their lives off of the set, but the example of seeing women who are talented, hardworking, and how, you know, we are called to adorn our bodies beautifully. And this is such a great challenge to us, to dress with great poise and respect ourselves, because the messages we put off about our bodies are essentially how we invite other people in.
Yeah, that's the key thing, right? You are presenting a message, ultimately, right, with how you dress. You're proclaiming something to those around us. And what is that message? Yeah, as I scroll through, and I'm no fashion expert at all, right? I remember watching Michelle Dockery in Downton Abbey. In fact, I watched it right up until they killed that guy, and that was the end. I didn't.
Oh, you start watching after Matthew. I love him.
Sorry for any spoilers if people didn't watch. Seasons have come since then, I thought it was such a plot disaster that he had to go off and do Beauty and the Beast that I didn't watch it after that. But the fact that they are dressing with dignity, I think that's one way to put put a class and dignity, not something we think about when we're dressing. But I'll tell you what, this has become a bigger issue for me with teenage girls. I got a couple of them now, another one on the way. And it is hard even to find clothes these days for teenage girls. Most of the clothes that are for sale for teenage girls, they put off a message that's not, I'm a woman with class and dignity and self-respect, right, to be honest. The message that a lot of the clothes proclaim is, I'm here for you to ogle me. I'm here as an object for, right, your pleasure. I don't have that much self-esteem. I'm going to get it from you looking at. That's the message I get, right, as a man. Maybe there's a little bit of variety there, but this is great. It's not like they're dressing in sackcloth or,
right,
something, right?
They're all wearing wonderful clothes that I think show that you can dress nice and sophisticated, and in fact people respect you a little bit more. They see you as a person more and less, you know, for the messages that you're sending out. There's a tremendous amount of respect I see that men have when women carry themselves respectfully.
From the studios of Relevant Radio, this has been Trending with Dawn and Timmery. Trending. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DawnJohnsonMinistries.org or Timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.